and the American people Wednesday, January 27th.
Madam Speaker, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress.
Join us for the president's speech and after the speech for analysis with NPR reporters and editors. The president's State of the Union address, Wednesday from NPR News.
Beginning at 8 p.m.
In sports this afternoon, the NFL's medical committee is discussing giving players echocardiograms in the wake of Chicago Bears defensive end Gaines Adams' death this month. Adams died of an enlarged heart, something an echocardiogram can detect. NFL teams already give extensive physicals to players. Stress testing and echocardiograms are conducted when the results of the physical, an EKG, and family history indicate the need. NFL medical people and outside experts who sit on the league's cardiovascular health committee previously have discussed making echocardiograms standard. They're doing so again, pending the final pathologist's report on Adams. But some cardiologists warn there could be risks, such as misdiagnoses, to making echocardiograms standard in a physical exam. The Chicago Blackhawks continue their road trip tonight in Edmonton, where the last-place Oilers have dropped 13 of their last 14 games. The division-leading Blackhawks have won the first two meetings with Edmonton this season. DePaul hosts a ninth-ranked West Virginia in a Big East Conference basketball game tonight. In the Big Ten, Northwestern visits Minnesota. The Purdue women have handed fourth-ranked Ohio State its first Big Ten loss with a 63-61 home victory. Freshman guard K.K. Hauser scored 18 points last night for the Boilermakers, who are 10-10 overall. That's sports.
WILL programs are made possible with support from Lincoln Square in Urbana, a lifestyle center which includes a food court with two independently owned coffee shops and cafes, including Piatto's and Uncommon Grounds.
Apple says its earnings are in a better place. The company has announced it had its most profitable quarter ever, thanks to good Christmas sales. This follows an entire year of beating Wall Street expectations. NPR's Laura Seidel has more.
Apple sold more than 8.7 million iPhones last quarter, but Wall Street was hoping for more than 9 million. Many analysts believe that their predictions might have been a little bit overly enthusiastic about iPhones, but Apple did beat some Wall Street sales predictions. More people were turning on new Mac computers. Sales were up 33% over a year ago to more than 3.3 million. Overall, it's been a good year for the company. Its stock price has more than doubled in the last 12 months. Apple did recently make some changes in its accounting methods, so there is some confusion about Apple's exact profits. But its stock did go up in after-hours trading. The good news from Apple comes as everyone awaits a big announcement on Wednesday from the company. Analysts believe that Apple will enter the tablet PC market. Apple may also have other product announcements, such as updated iPods and iPhones, that could ultimately drive sales in the coming year. Laura Seidel, NPR News, San Francisco.
More people are becoming concerned about the growing problems of obesity and diabetes. Some even compare foods that contribute to these health problems to nicotine and tobacco. Julie Grant reports on efforts to regulate foods that are bad for us.
Yale University professor Kelly Brownell has been watching for a long time as Americans gain weight. He says obesity and diabetes are creating debilitating health problems, and the food industry is largely to blame. Brownell says science is starting to show that people can become addicted to sugar, fat, and salt, the same stuff that's in most processed foods.
Certain parts of the brain get activated by food constituents, particularly sugar, that look like the same activation that occurs with heavily addictive substances like nicotine, alcohol, or morphine.
Brownell says the science is not definitive at this point, and he doesn't expect it will ever show that donuts are as addictive as cigarettes, but he expects something similar, and so he's advocating that society treat these treats the same way as cigarettes. Tax them, and put the money toward prevention programs. Brownell is specifically pushing for a tax on sugary drinks. He says this approach worked for smokes, so why not soda pop?
Well, there's no question about it. The rate of people smoking in the United States is about half of what it was in the 1950s and 60s, and that's attributable to a number of things. But the economists have figured that the taxes were the single most effective contributor to that.
Brownell says California has held hearings on the idea. The New York state legislature is considering a tax on sugary drinks, and New Hampshire has just introduced legislation. And he says that's just the tip of the iceberg. More sugar taxes are on the way. We tried to reach the food industry's major trade group, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, to comment for this story, but they didn't respond. We also didn't hear back from General Mills, a company that recently announced plans to lower the sugar content in its cereals. We did speak with John Feldman. He's an attorney who represents some of the major food manufacturers. He says they make foods that have salt, fat, and sugar because people like them.
There are products that people want to buy because they taste good, or they are fun, or they're attractive, of course. And if they didn't sell, people wouldn't make them.
Feldman says any laws limiting or taxing certain foods must be based on scientific evidence, facts that show the foods are causing health problems. He says science hasn't proven that with sugar, salt, and fat. Consumers at one Ohio supermarket also want the sugary drink tax idea to fizzle out. College student Alicia Cobb is looking at the sweetened teas. She says beverages are only one of the reasons Americans are overweight.
So is McDonald's and Burger King and not working out and being a lazy bum.
How do you think people are supposed to live? Texting everything.
Marie Holloway has a 12-pack of ginger ale in her cart. She says she's not supposed to have sugar because her doctor is concerned she's developing diabetes.
I only get a small income and my doctor takes all of my money for co-payments and doctor bills and stuff, then I don't have nothing left because they've been taxed everything so high. I think it's terrible.
Some TV pundits call the soda tax part of the Obama nanny state, telling people what's good for them and limiting their choices. But those who support the sugar beverage tax say it doesn't take away choice. It just helps people break what might be an addictive habit, one that's costing everyone lots of money in health care costs. For the Environment Report, I'm Julie Grant.
You know, when you have a decision to make, the standard advice is to think everything through and weigh the pros and cons and reason your way to the right choice. But today we have a story about the limits of our rational minds to help us make decisions. It comes to us from our friends at Radiolab. Here's Steve Inske.
Hey, Steve.
That's Chad Abermont of WNYC.
And this is me, Robert Krulwich.
Oh, sorry, Robert. Didn't mean to leave you out. Robert Krulwich as well.
Hi.
Okay, now before we get started, remind us what Radiolab is.
Radiolab is a show where we explore big ideas that make us rethink ourselves.
And also the world all around us. So.
Right. And today we're thinking about, as you said, how we make decisions. So, Steve, let me just get things started by asking you, how many numbers do you think you can remember at once?
I have no idea. Test me.
Well, all right. Ready?
Sure.
4, 6, 1, 7, 8, 2, 3, 33.
This is always a trick question with him.
0.
4, 6, 7, 1, 8, 2, 3, 33, 9, 1. And after that, I don't know what it is.
That's good, actually. Because, you know, I can do 4, 7.
Well, Robert is a special case. But it turns out there's a classic study in psychology that asked this very question. It happened in 1956. There was a psychologist named George Miller who asked people to memorize a bunch of different stuff, numbers, letters, musical notes. And what he found is that the average human being can hold about 7 items in their short-term memory. 7.
Like a phone number.
Exactly. Now, the interesting thing is what happens to our decision-making powers when you try and get more than 7 in your head.
What?
Do you want me to shut the door?
Yes, door. That'd be good.
Well, let me introduce you to someone.
I'm Baba Sher. I'm a professor here at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. In marketing, a lot of my research has to do with the brain.
And tricking people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, Robert, I want to tell you about one particular experiment that he did.
Okay. So the experiment was pretty straightforward.
It goes like this. He got a bunch of subjects together. He said, okay, I'm going to give you all a number.
A number.
On a little card, you're going to read the number, and I want you to commit that number to memory.
Take as much time as you want to memorize the number.
And then he says,
you're now going to walk to the next room and recall the number. And that's what subjects think. Test subjects think that they're going to be doing in that study.
So they know they're going to be in one place, getting a number, going to another place, reciting that number.
That's right.
That's all they know.
That's all they know.
What they don't know is that not everybody is getting the same kind of number.
So some people get a 7-digit number, some people get a 2-digit number.
That I can do, by the way. I think I can do 2 digits.
No, I doubt it. All the subjects have to do is they've got to memorize a number, walk out of room 1, down the hall to room 2, then recite their number. Now, just imagine, you and me,
mm-hmm.
person with a two-digit number in their head was walking out of room one.
1, 2 is my number. I can definitely remember this.
Down the hall. Same time, someone with 7 digits in their head.
1, 2, 2, 8, 9, 3, 6.
Walks down the hall. 2, 8, 9. Now, here's where the trickery comes in. As they're walking down the hall, mid-memorizing, all of a sudden...
Excuse me.
They pass a lady in the hallway, and she's holding something.
Sorry to interrupt you, but would you like a snack?
Sure. Okay.
She says, here, have a snack, just as our way of saying thanks for participating in the study. You can have one of two snacks you choose.
You can choose between either A, a big fat slice of chocolate cake, or B, a nice bowl of fruit salad.
Meanwhile, they've both got these numbers still in their head. Now, here's the weird thing. When they finally make their choice...
What would you like? Some yummy cake or some healthy fruit.
The people, this is crazy. The people with two digits in their head.
You know, I love cake, but I think I'll take the fruit.
Almost always choose the fruit.
It's healthy.
Whereas the people with 7 digits in their head almost always choose the cake.
You know, the cake. I want the cake.
And we're talking by huge margins here.
It was significant. I mean, this was like in some cases a 20, 25, 30 point difference.
Huh. So what?
Meaning cake. If you have 7 digits in your head, you are twice as likely to choose cake. And fruit. Twice.
So, let's get on with this. So the people with the 7 digits get the cake. I get that part. I don't know why.
That doesn't interest you as to why they would choose...
Well, a little, yeah. Why?
Okay, good. Now that I've got your interest, I'll tell you the theory.
Okay.
Okay, and this is where it gets interesting. It seems that the brain is anatomically organized into different systems.
Dual systems is what they're called.
That's Jonah Lehrer, science writer, who we often call when talking about brainy stuff. According to Jonah, you have a rational deliberative system, which is sort of more to the front of the brain. And then deeper in the brain, you have an emotional unconscious system. And according to Jonah, these two systems are often at war.
I mean, there's constant competition between the rational brain and the emotional brain. They're always competing for attention and to guide and direct your behavior.
Especially when you have a tough choice like Babashev's cake versus fruit. There, the competition is fierce.
Emotional automatic system is pushing them towards the cake.
The emotional brain loves sweet, gooey chocolate cake. That's really what you want.
Chocolate now.
On the other hand,
the deliberative system, on the other hand, comes and says, wait a second.
Are you thinking about this choice carefully?
This probably is not good for you because...
Calories, sugar, high fat content.
Think about your waistline.
It's going to make you chubby.
Think about your cholesterol.
It is not good for your health. It is not good for your self-esteem.
And that acts as a check.
But if you give that rational, deliberative system 7 numbers, just 7, to memorize.
1, 2, 2, 8, 9, 3, 6. 1, 2, 8. 1, 2, 2, 8, 5.
Cake.
1, 2, 2.
Shh.
1.
So delicious.
Cholesterol.
Suddenly,
two,
the rational brain has too much to keep track of.
You know you want to.
Shh.
It's one, getting tired.
Two,
it can't put up as much of a fight.
Oh.
Which means greater likelihood that the emotions will drive their choices.
The astounding thing here, says Jonah, is not simply that, you know, sometimes emotion wins over reason. It's how easily it wins. 7 numbers is all it takes to screw up reason.
Just think about how astonishingly limited that is.
Yeah, I mean, compared to emotion, team reason is, well...
pretty feeble. And when we always rely on it, all the advice you get in decision-making is stop and think, slow down, take your time. And yet when you actually look at the brain, that can lead you to rely on a feeble piece of machinery.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just set aside this cake and thank Robert and Jed for stopping in. Thank you, gentlemen.
Sure thing.
We kind of knew you'd do the cake.
That's Jed Edmondrod and Robert Krulwich from the show Radiolab, a production of WNYC in New York. You can explore Radiolab at NPR.org.
And... thinking of chocolate cake and fruit salad reminds me that tomorrow in the 1 o'clock hour of the afternoon magazine, we'll talk with a sociologist about school food. Her name is Janet Papendick, and she is the author of Free for All, Fixing School Food in America. That will follow the 1 o'clock news tomorrow here on the afternoon magazine.
On the eve of the President's State of the Union address, we measured the state of a town that was hit hard by the recession.
A year ago, we were working from day to day and from week to week, not knowing if we were going to have work. I personally have a little more sense of security. I think we've bottomed out.
Revisiting Chillicothe, Ohio, in search of the recovery. That's later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.
And our FM... HD signals are back up at FM 90.9 HD2 and HD3.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Yoga Institute of Champaign-Urbana, offering beginner-level instruction in Iyengar yoga and special classes for men, women, teens, seniors, knees, low back, neck, shoulders, and plus sizes. New classes start the first week of February. Information at 344-YOGA or on the web at yoga-cu.com.
Earth and Sky.
Today we're speaking with Russell Schnell, who oversees atmospheric observatories for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. He says what humans put into the air has a big impact on our atmosphere.
There's not much air, so we are affecting the atmosphere very dramatically. The atmosphere on the Earth is extremely thin.
Dr. Schnell explained that 5 atmospheric observatories stretch across the Pacific region to monitor Earth's air. They each take 300 to 400 different types of measurements daily. Schnell spoke about the observatory at Mauna Loa, Hawaii.
The air that comes to this observatory is very well mixed, meaning that it doesn't have any local pollution. So it's kind of the background, the purest, the most stable air that you can measure.
He said this stable background helps in monitoring the global changes happening now in our atmosphere. For example, increased carbon dioxide concentrations known to be responsible for driving climate change. Schnell added that if countries set requirements to cut carbon dioxide emissions, the measurements of these observatories will help see if these cuts are effective. Our thanks today to NOAA Pacific Services Center. I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
The forecast for Illinois and Indiana for the remainder of the afternoon, mostly cloudy and windy, with scattered flurries in areas of blowing snow. Highs ranging from 15 in far northwestern Illinois to 34 in the far south. Tonight in northern Indiana, cloudy with a few snow showers and flurries, elsewhere partly to mostly cloudy. Lows ranging from 5 in far northwestern Illinois to 23 in the far south. Tomorrow in northwestern and west central Illinois, cloudy with snow showers. Elsewhere in the north and in central sections, cloudy with light snow arriving from west to east during the afternoon. In the south tomorrow, cloudy with rain showers arriving during the afternoon, highs ranging from 22 in northwestern Illinois to 45 in the far south. In Champaign-Urbana this afternoon, mostly cloudy, windy, and cold with occasional flurries and some blowing snow. The high around 20, the wind from the west at 15 to 25 miles per hour with higher gusts. Tonight, mostly cloudy, the low 14. The wind from the west at 8 to 16 miles per hour. Tomorrow, cloudy with light snow.